Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 169 for October 19th, 2012. And how? Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Peter D.
John. Just the two of us.
Just the two of us, right. Well, not entirely true.
Not yet.
Not yet, because later in the show we have Hao Tai Teng from Ford joining us.
And, yes.
And we've got a Focus ST here in the studio with us.
Which is very cool.
It's totally cool because the studio is pretty much all black and this thing's just bright red. And man, does it pop
and
here.
It's a good red.
And it is. It is. It's a red red. But we'll get into that later in the show. And let's kick it off. You brought in an Auto Extremist sweatshirt.
Yeah, that has the old school original typeface, which we still like the best. But and the trivia question, if you would like to
win this thing. Tonight, live on the show, we have a trivia question for everybody watching. So shoot,
so,
Peter.
There are only two drivers who have won the Indianapolis 500 and the Daytona 500. Who are they, and what years did they win? Only two drivers to win at Indy and the Daytona 500. Who are they, and what years did they win?
So shoot us an email, and we're going to, from those who get it right, pick out at random from the right answers, and whoever we pick that gets the answer right can get this Auto Extremist
sweatshirt,
and we'll announce that at the end of the show.
And it's XL, so don't be asking for something else. I mean, it's a trivia contest, but we control the horizontal and vertical, and that's the end of it.
Right. So, as always, this industry, it never slows down. The big news this week to me was A123, the battery suppliers, filing for bankruptcy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when we talk about electrification, I get a lot of email and they say, well, you know, I love my Volt. We're not really talking about the Volt here. We're talking about pure electrics. And pure electric vehicles are having trouble gaining favor, except in the touchy-feely enclaves of
San Francisco.
Yeah, Northern California.
Santa Monica.
Yeah, Santa Monica.
Santa Barbara, I
should
say. Santa Barbara,
Washington, D.C.
Right.
Pretty much it, pure electrics. But you know, that we're not talking about extended range, but A123, that was a big bet.
Right.
By the government and by
the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
Which put in about $240 million.
Yeah, and they just filed for bankruptcy.
We've talked about this a lot. I actually like electric cars. I want to get that right on the record right now. I think the Leaf is really good. We can talk later when Hal's on about the Focus Electric, which I think is an awesome car.
Yeah.
I've driven Dakota Electric, which I'm not that impressed by the car, but I am very impressed by the electric powertrain. And so let's get that, you know, out of the way. I like electric cars, but I'm saying these things are a disaster. And they're a financial disaster for the car companies and the battery suppliers that are trying to make a business case out of this. And I think A123 is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and that's the key thing. It's the business case. It's one thing to have politicians tell us what we should be doing. It's another thing to make it, you know, realistically, financially for all concerned. But, you know, politicians never think about that. And I'm not anti, you know, readers probably think I'm anti-electric cars, too. I'm not. We live in a country where you should be able to drive whatever you want to drive. I don't care what, you know, whether
right.
it's a monster truck 6 feet off the ground or a Leaf, whatever. It's cool. But the business case doesn't exist for these vehicles right now. And unless you and me and all of us as taxpayers want to keep, you know, pouring money into this hole. I don't, you know, it's just not going to work. When will it work? I don't know. When gas is $6 a gallon?
No, it's not, Peter, because, you know, it's $8 a gallon in Europe.
And
electrics aren't selling there either.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever, $5 or $6 a gallon in Japan. And, it, you know, Japan's not going bonkers over electrics. So, you know, let's not just keep it, you know, American focused in that. The problem really is that this is a government mandate, the government trying to tell us what we should be buying. And that never works. It just never works. Even
product,
with the best of intentions, it doesn't work.
In any product.
Right. Right.
Especially in, you know, big ticket products,
right,
like cars.
So, I mean, you know, these things aren't even selling well, and Uncle Sam will give you $7,500 off your taxes if you buy one, and they're still not selling well. So I just think they ought to say, look, we tried, it didn't work. Why don't we just give the industry targets we want them to meet and back off? Let's not dictate the technology or try to goose sales with billions in tax incentives. And just better let the market decide.
But, you know, like you said, this is the tip of the iceberg. I mean, look at Nissan. Look at the investment Carlos Ghosn has made. I mean, he is all in,
right,
as we've said many times, on the Leaf. And it's not just here. He's got this plant, and what are they
doing? I don't know. I understand what they're saying. We're in it for the long haul. This is an investment in the future. I buy all that. Yeah, absolutely. But they're going to lose a ton of money. And I mean, we're talking billions here. They're going to lose a ton of money. And it's not just them. You know, even though the Volt is selling better than the Leaf, GM's losing a fortune on that. I just don't see this turning around anytime soon.
And, you know, that affects jobs. You know, the state of Michigan, and let's face it, we don't have a lot of money laying around. They invested big money.
Well, the state put in about $240 million to create 800 jobs. I mean, you do the math, and it's just inexcusable.
And as a state, we can't really afford that.
No.
And 800 jobs.
That's nothing, no. And, you know, look at, you know, Fisker's running into money problems right now. And that's why I say A123, it's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot of these companies going belly up.
I mean, Fisker just announced they were going to delay their sedan, which is
right,
no secret. I mean, no surprise.
Right. So enough of the electric car stuff. Yeah. I just came from Lincoln. They did a big event for the media to show their design center. And kind of interesting, you know, they said this is the first time that Ford has had a standalone Lincoln Design Center in like almost 40 years, since the 1970s.
Yeah, I mean, self-contained designers just focused on Lincoln.
Only on Lincoln. They do exterior and interior design in the same place. They have color and materials in the same place. And this is what really interested me, that It's a big studio. I mean, a big studio. And they also have a mezzanine to it where they have their design engineers located. So literally, the design engineers look down on the guys working with all the clay and the CAD stuff and whatnot. So that was kind of intriguing to me. They seem to be taking this seriously.
Well, I think that was the reason they brought the media in, or, you know, they brought you in. They're dead serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the media in general is like, yeah, whatever, show me. But they are doing it, so.
They are. And, in fact, I ran into Murray Callum, you know, from Design, and he was saying, yeah, we brought you guys in to show you we're serious. But he says, believe me, a lot of this is to show everybody inside that we're serious, too.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a very interesting little development as they try to move Lincoln back into being a contender.
Well, it's a long road, and we'll see how they, you know, stay the course, because it's going to be a long.
Well, two challenges I see. One is stay the course. Everybody's real excited about it right now, but what about 5 years down the road?
Yeah.
And then secondly, the dealer network. That is, I think, the real Achilles heel in what they're trying to pull off.
Well, no, they've done a lot of work that sort of behind the curtain work that we don't know about with those dealers. They've done a lot of work. They've done a lot of You know, they've cut the dealer count down. The ones that are still there want to be there. They've had an extensive training program for all these dealers. And, you know, as we've said many times, you can have the most brilliant, focused marketing campaign in the world, the best commercials, everyone on board. And if a consumer walks into a dealer and has a bad experience, it all goes away. So I do know that they've been working hard on the dealer component.
Yeah. Audi's doing something really interesting on building up its dealer network because same thing. Yeah. Great cars, great styling, good advertising, but you go in and the dealer treats you like crap and you go, forget it, I'm so out of here.
Yeah.
But what I found intriguing about Audi is the training program that they're putting together. And training is not even the right way to put it. It's almost like a kind of a town hall thing that they're doing all over the country, involving 15,000 dealer personnel. So it's not just the dealer principals. It's not just the salespeople. It's everybody. It's the secretary. It's the guy behind the parts counter. It's the service manager. It's the mechanics. It's everybody. And what Audi's doing is they're having their top management travel all around the country to these meetings. And instead of like going through classrooms or lectures or speeches, they're literally just telling stories about who they are, where they come from, and what great service means to them. And by doing it on this very personal level, they tell me, we're going to have to get Scott Keogh from Audi on here and talk about this because I find it intriguing what they're doing. But they tell me they're seeing dramatic improvements at the dealership level because it's everybody all in. And it's not, here's your book, go study this, here's these questions, here's these lectures. It's more on the lines of storytelling. And I just find it interesting what they're doing.
Well, we have one of their show pony dealerships in this area out on M59. And that place is really, they have been programmed. I mean, everybody that you come in contact at that dealer is very much in tune with what they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah. So if Lincoln's going to do the same sort of thing that Audi's doing, and I fully confess I got to learn more about what Audi's doing and not just have the Audi people tell me it's going great. You know, I got to find this out on my own. But if Lincoln can do something along those lines, I think it could greatly accelerate what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, well, they have to. I mean, and we need to get Scott on the show.
Yeah.
When he's coming through town.
Well, he's told me he very much wants to be on the show.
Okay.
So,
Scott?
Yeah. Right.
Give us a call.
That's right. That's exactly right. So speaking of other things that we like, the Delta Wing got in a big accident.
Yeah, Delta Wing got punted at Road Atlanta in testing yesterday, and they worked till 4 in the morning, and they're back on track as we speak.
See, I'm glad to hear you say that, because the one photograph I saw of the car, it looked badly broken.
Yeah, and we just watched the video, and you know, the problem is, the good thing about the Delta Wing is it's half the aero drag, half the weight, half the horsepower, but still able to lap at LMP2 times, American Le Mans Series LMP2 class. The bad thing is it's half the weight. So when there is an altercation, it suffers.
It's the cue ball effect. Yeah. It just gets pinged off the track.
We saw it got hit in Le Mans, which was bad.
Right.
This was a bad one, but, you know, they repaired and they're back on track. So
that's cool, because you and I both have been following this car from before the beginning.
Yeah.
Before the beginning. So
the funny thing is now, the concept has been in existence for almost 5 years now.
Is that right?
Yeah, because, you know, originally it was a proposed idea for the next generation Indy car.
Right.
So it's been in Ben Balbi's design computer for almost 5 years.
It's amazing how long it takes really cool new ideas to come to fruition.
Other racing news, they just announced that the U.S. Grand Prix in New Jersey has been postponed 1 year.
Why is that?
from next July to the following.
Money? It's usually money is the answer.
Not money. I just think they're out of time. They haven't done any. I guess the states have to still approve the course, and they haven't done any promotion, and it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, don't do it half-assed.
Yeah.
Put it back a year
because
and do
that's going to be a big deal. I mean, the Austin thing is going to be huge,
right?
Because that track is going to live on all year for different races. The New Jersey thing is a one shot, every year, and it's got to be, it's New York, so it's got to be.
It's got to be over the top.
Yeah, everything's got to be superb and over the top.
So I've spent today and the prior 2 days out in Hell, Michigan.
Oh, yeah, you're one of the chosen few who get to be on the, now what is it? We need to tell them.
Yeah, the North American Car and Truck of the Year.
Which they
jury.
Announce. The opening morning of Media Days at the Detroit Auto Show.
Right. So we'll announce the winners then. But now we're in the process of narrowing. Well, first we already did. We evaluated all the cars that are out there, then chopped that down to what we call the short list. And so the last 3 days I've been out driving just about everything on the short list.
And you based... Was it based in Hell, Michigan, or near it? Or
it's in Hell, Michigan. I mean, we all joke about I'm going to hell.
Yeah. I mean, that's the town's livelihood is tourism.
Well, yeah, the town, as you say, is two bars.
Well, that's okay. That's like in Wisconsin. And no matter how big the town is, if there's an intersection, there's a bar in each corner.
That's right. And because it's hell, they make a fortune selling T-shirts that said, I went to hell.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sort of thing. But kind of cool. We've got... about 50 jurors who got to evaluate all these things. Not that all 50 show up at this event, but it's amazing to me how if you drive the same... I've got my own little 12-mile loop because I know the roads out there very well. And there's two-lane stuff. There's some really good twisty up-and-down bits, which is hard to find in Michigan. There's a couple of long roads where you can get up to highway speeds and cruise at that, and then some dirt road section that I got too. And it takes about 20 minutes-ish to do this 12.2 miles. But if you go in cars, and I group them by like-type vehicles and or similarly priced vehicles, and you go back to back. And, man, in 20 minutes, you can pick up. You learn so much about a car doing it this way. It's really good. Really, to me, it's the best way to evaluate a vehicle, other than going to a track.
So you can't say anything.
Well, no, I'll say a couple of things. The three revelations for me so far, because I had not been in them before, were Dodge Ram pickup, really impressive, Hyundai Santa Fe, and Ford Fusion. Now, I'm not trying to give anything away. I'm just saying I had not been in those vehicles and came out of them going, wow, wow. Yeah. So there's some others on my list, too, that I'm really keen on, too. All year long, I've been very high on the Mazda CX-5 and the Nissan Altima, just to name a few. But the real problem is you go back-to-back-to-back in all these vehicles, God, it's so hard. There's a lot of good cars out there.
Conversely, there's really not bad.
There's nothing bad. There's nothing bad. Where you get out and go, "Pooh, why did they even bother?" Or John Lamb, who's on the jury once, he had a great line. He said he was at an unveil of a car and they pulled it off and he thought, "Why didn't they just give the money to the poor?"
Well, there was another line. Dan Neal had a great line. I forget what car it was, but he said it was clearly assembled at gunpoint. But you don't see that anymore.
You don't. You really don't. It's so that's one of the takeaways that I had was the more vehicles I drove, it's like, uh-oh, this is just getting harder.
Well, and that's, it's good to talk about that because that's why image and branding is so important. Because these cars are all pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Some are real good. Some are good beyond their station.
Right.
They're driving around for $35,000 and they could easily be $55,000 with the amount of technology and the capability and the competence involved. So that's why branding, image wrangling, all that stuff is going to become important, and design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, whatever catches.
No, you're so right. You're absolutely right. We're seeing a real convergence in quality, features on a car,
the democratization of technology. It comes down. I mean,
right.
It's. Well, look at the car we have in the showroom today, John.
In our showroom right here in front of us.
I mean, that car is, you know, the ingredients, the capability, the dynamics, the fuel efficiency, the interior, everything about it. And, you know, wow, we're ready to take a break.
Yeah, we do want to talk about this car. So let's take a break, and then we'll have Hao Tai Tang join us as well. So, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our friends at Bridgestone. Hao Tai Tang, welcome to Autoline After Hours.
John,
welcome.
Thanks for having me. Peter, great to see you. I love what you've done with this place.
Yeah.
First time in the new studio for me.
Yeah. No, this we love our little building here. It's just perfect
One
for
thing,
us.
One thing, you know, before we get started, Jen, we should have Hao tell everyone how he became fell in love with cars. It's a good story.
Peter's reminding me of the story. It was during the Mustang product when I was working on that, and people asked, how did you get interested in Mustang? And I actually was born and I grew up in Vietnam, in Saigon, during the war. And Al Ekstran, old-time hot rodder, was doing an event with the USO circuit to build a morale and promote driving safety with the U.S. troops. And that was the first time I ever got to see a Mustang as a kid, you know, growing up in Vietnam. So I just fell in love. Our family had a little deux chevaux, you know. So
kidding.
That was a big car in Saigon back in the day. And I've never seen anything like a Mustang. So it left a lasting impression, and, you know, who would have thunk it?
And years later, you ended up actually working on it.
Working at Ford and then having the privilege and honor to work with the Mustang team.
So your family came to the United States.
My mother worked for Chase Manhattan Bank in
the
Saigon
kidding.
Branch. And we were fortunate enough to get evacuated.
To get out when the getting was good.
2 days before the Capitol fell. Yeah.
Wow.
We watched it all unfold in the hotel in Guam.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how'd you come to Ford?
Right out of school. I got recruited out of school. I went to school in Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon, and Ford recruited me out of school, and I joined the trainee program and, you know, came up through the organization.
I just think it's a fascinating
story. No, it's a fascinating story, and I think the first time I ran into you is when you were at SVT at Ford.
Right, yeah. Yes, yep.
That's where I met you, too. Right, yeah.
And now you're what?
I'm the vice president of global engineering for Ford. So it's since April when Derek Kuzak retired, mm-hmm. Raj Nair replaced Derek, and I replaced Raj.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's almost like a dream job come true for you, right?
Again.
Yeah. I've been really fortunate, and it's a great honor and privilege to work with a lot of bright people.
And they've moved you around a bit too, because. I ran into you 3 years ago in Brazil.
We were playing dominoes in Brazil, yeah. Small world. I spent 4 years in Brazil leading our South American product development team. And I was talking to Peter a little bit before. It was a great time to be there during this global crisis and slowdown. Brazil was booming. And it was great to watch the consumer confidence grow in Brazil, but also help launch the vision of One Ford with a very young team down there.
Great people, Brazilians.
That's the best part about living there, is the Brazilians are the most generous and happy, you know, going people in the world.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what you brought to the studio today, this brilliantly red Focus ST.
It's striking, isn't it? We're really proud of this car. This is our first One Ford performance product. So, the Focus...
Well, give us a background on that, right. Because... The ST's been available in Europe before, but we've never had it stateside, and it's never been anywhere else, right?
Yeah. So we're launching this now globally, consistent with Alan's One Ford vision. It's going to go to 40 different countries. We're building it in Saarlouis in Europe. We're building it here in Michigan, and then we're going to build it in China as well. And if there's one product that's the poster child of One Ford, it would be the Focus. And now We're continuing that mantra, if you will, with a performance product. Design in Europe, a tuned collaboration between Team RS and the SVT team here.
And there's just marginal difference between this car and the Euro car to like ride height or something?
Yeah, no, actually, Peter, what we wanted to do was really not water it down, deliver one car in terms of the product attributes. We've made some minor changes just for regulatory. So wipers, I believe, lighting, labels on the visors. So just really minimal changes, but for all
cosmetic stuff. What about tires? Because in Europe, you know, you can get tires.
And Eagle F1 summer tires only. So we didn't. Again, we tried our best to keep the vision pure.
So legally, do you have an issue here? Do you have to tell people you have to put snow tires on in the winter if you live in the snow belt?
Yeah. So we have some of the SVT products have summer tires only. So we tell folks that, you know, the recommendation is in the wintertime you need to put on winter tires.
That's cool. I love that you're doing that because tires, as you know, make a massive difference in how a car performs.
It's the highest leverage component on the car. Yeah. Everything else that we do, if you think about it, is controlling the force on the tire and the orientation of the tire. It does all the work. Yeah.
So the previews, the reviews have been great on it.
Yeah, we've been really happy with the car. I was fortunate enough to participate in the launch that we did in the south of France on some great roads, and it was just, you know, really well received.
Yeah, I was invited to that, and I couldn't go. I had other commitments here, and boy, you want to kick yourself when you turn down a trip like that.
Right, yeah.
So tell us a little bit more, you know,
okay.
So, powertrain and whatnot, just for those who aren't familiar with the car.
Sure. It's got our 2-liter EcoBoost engine, so it's a gas direct injection engine, 252 horsepower, 270 foot-pounds of torque. One of the really neat things we did was we put in this overboost feature in the turbo. So with EcoBoost, one of the really nice things is the torque curve is like a square wave. So peak torque at about 2,500 RPMs, and then what we do is we allow you for 15 seconds to overboost it by controlling the wastegate. It gives you, I think, about a 7% increase in the boost. So really nice engine, great fuel efficiency, 32 miles to the gallon in the highway, 26 combined label. You mentioned that we have an ST in Europe. It was a 5-cylinder engine, so it had a really characteristic powertrain soundtrack, if you will. So one of the neat things we did with this product was we introduced something called an active sound symposer. In the intake system, we actually tune a composite valve that vibrates, so it's like a reed on a saxophone, if you will. We tune it right at the 250 hertz to 400 hertz frequency, which is really where the nice sound quality is. And what's neat about it is, rather than just having it vibrate, you know, with the induction, we have a butterfly valve in there that is controlled in conjunction with the throttle. So at you know, high engine RPM, we open it up and you get this nice noise. But when you're cruising on the highway in sixth gear, it's really quiet and refined. It doesn't drone you out. So we're really proud of that. Suspension is all tuned, revised tuning. We lowered the car by 10 millimeters, as Peter mentioned. Front knuckle's unique. We changed the knuckle to get more camber. And in the rear of the car, we actually changed the rear knuckle and moved the routing of the active roll bar, onto the knuckle. So it's it's behind the wheel center, so the motion ratio is actually better than 1-to-1. We did that because in the front, we went with a variable ratio rack. So it's slow on center, 13-to-1 on center, 10-to-1 at the ends. It's only 1.8. Turns
lock to lock.
When we did that, the car got really quick on the front, and we felt like it actually, you guys would feel this as you drive it. The yaw center felt really far behind you. The car was just moving too quick in the rear. So by changing the rear anti-roll bar attachment, we actually sped up the load transfer to the rear tire to get the rear to catch up with the front. And now the yaw center, when you drive it, it's like right here, which is about optimal. It's about, you really feel it naturally. You know, you guys pick it up. I think an enthusiast would pick it up. A customer wouldn't know how to articulate it, but they would feel like the car is just a little darty. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's where the devils are in the details of development. That people, it's a black art in some cases.
It is.
And a lot of people outside the business have no idea the hours and the details and the thought that goes into especially a high-performance car, and especially something like the ST, which is, you know, for a lot of people, the future high performance, you know?
Sure it is,
at that price point, fuel economy.
Yeah.
So just by what you're describing, it must be a very neutral handling car.
It is, and we also are leveraging technology. We have torque vectoring control, so that helps the car turn in. We tune the car to be fairly neutral to try to get it as close to a sort of rear-wheel drive driving dynamics as you can with this architecture. So I know you're going to have the car, and we're going to get Peter in the car, and we'd love to hear your feedback.
Yeah. And just so everybody watching knows, I haven't driven the car. The good news is I'm going home with this thing tonight. Yeah. So, I can't wait to get into it.
And, you know, the body work is tweaked, too, over the standard five-door Focus, correct?
That's right, Peter. The front fascia is unique. We've changed the lamps. We've got rocker treatments on the side. You talked about the wheels in the rear. It also has a really nice feature. We call it a dual hex center exit exhaust system and a different rear fascia. And on the interior, we've got all the accoutrements that you would expect, unique seats, Recaro seats.
Yeah, those seats.
Steering wheels.
Wild.
ST badges, you know, strategically placed.
So. I like this new front end look that's more a la Fusion.
Yes.
Just a terrific look. You know, the other was okay, but this one does it for me.
Yeah. Of course, you're going after probably one of the toughest competitors in the world in the Volkswagen GTI.
You know, the Mazda product. So it's a competitive, very competitive segment. And we, you know, we really...
And the reviews have been...
Yeah. We're happy so far with the reception of the car. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And price?
It starts at below $24,500, so really attractive price point. Great, you know, great bang for the buck. Really
yeah, nice I mean, you can package. Get it that, and but then there's something like a $4,000 package that...
We've got two optional packages to upgrade to, and yeah, you can get it fully loaded up with all the... The features,
but still, even at 24.5 plus another $4,000, that's a very attractive.
But
package.
Even if you just wanted to get without the package, you're still getting a.
Yeah, it's a great entry price point, but then it also demonstrates the strength of the brand. You guys were talking about branding. The fact that we can walk a Focus up to that price point is a credit to the design.
This is amazing because you heard us talking earlier about electric cars and. You know, I told Peter I drove the Focus electric, and I was knocked out by the car. So to see, you know, the two extremes, you know, pure electric to the ST version and a number of others in between, it's pretty amazing what you guys are doing with this product.
Yeah, the power of choice is what Jim Farley would say if he was sitting here, and I think that's really important, is being able to offer that suite of offerings. And I, you know, you guys were talking about what's going to happen in terms of energy. And I think our strategy, we feel good about it because we do have a suite of technologies. We're not betting the farm on any one thing. And so whether it's, you know, better engine technology like EcoBoost or smart diesels like we have in Europe or electrification, we want to make sure we're protected.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're ready to go whichever way the market goes, pretty much.
And as you guys know, the energy policy across regions is so divergent, and in Europe, where there is a compelling reason for diesel, it's much cheaper. The emissions requirements are different. It's hard to say we will come up with one technology that will work everywhere, right?
So, what are what diameter are the wheels again?
It's a 230. It's 18-inch 235/45, I believe. It's a Goodyear Eagle.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about the gearbox?
It's a 6-speed DuraShift transmission, manual transmission. Yeah.
Very interesting. Manual transmission only in the U.S.
Yes.
Where 97% or whatever it of the market is automatics.
But 90% of the people looking at this car want a stick.
Right.
Or 99.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And so you got some big thing hanging over the rear glass too, right?
Right, unique spoiler, very, very good. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. That's also unique to the ST. Yeah, so we're really excited about it. It's a great driving car, the whole driving experience. And what we were trying to strive for was a car that, you know, flatters the novice and rewards the expert driver. So, you know, if you're a good driver, you get in there, you really can push it to the limit. It's easy to drive. It's forgiving. And then everybody else, they get out of it and they feel like, I'm a good driver. Yeah. And that's a sign of a good car, a well-tuned car.
What's Ford's strategy in terms of performance then? Would we see a Fiesta ST, a Fusion ST, or is it just going to be the Focus?
Well, we're not going to make any product news today, but we are, you know, I mentioned this globalizing our performance team now all under Herman Zallenbach, and we're taking the guys that we have in Europe with TMRS. This is the first offspring from that marriage, if you will. We certainly are still hard at work with our performance Mustang products, and then we've got the Raptor, which is doing really well.
Unique vehicle, yeah. The Raptor is.
Yeah. This product is really interesting because one of the things we wanted to do with Focus was appeal to younger buyers, and if you look at the sales of the last generation Focus, what we call the C170, to today, the median age of the customer dropped by 10.
That's a lot. 10 years.
10 years. It went from 56 to 46. And then we're getting a lot more conquests. So the number of people are coming out from outside the Ford brand is also about 10% higher. So we want to build on that, attracting younger buyers, you know, import buyers with this ST product.
Mm-hmm. That's still an issue, isn't it, for Ford, that, you know, amongst import buyers, that Detroit still doesn't have it right. It's the perception.
It's, you know, it's
a lingering perception.
It's something that we have to consistently deliver, great products that people really want, and do it consistently, you know, one after the other. That's the only way you can overcome some of those, you know, preconceptions.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ford's got, you know, you're in the midst of the Fusion is just getting to the dealers, so.
Right.
I think when people see that on the road, it's a pretty striking package.
Yeah, so between the Focus and the Fusion, the C and CD cars, that's really broad coverage for us. That's, you know, over half the volume. So those are the two biggest segments, and those two products have to do well if we want to be a player. Yeah.
So how far down the road is Ford towards one Ford, i.e. having pretty much the product that you want on a global basis?
Yeah, I think we are just about there, John. So if we talked about, you know, Focus, we talked about Fusion. As you know, we launched Escape, and that replaced the two unique Kuga and Escape globally. So Escape's been launched here in the U.S. We're going to launch it in Europe and in China shortly. In terms of B-Car, our Fiesta is now global. So we B, C, C, D. The next convergence for us is around the commercial vehicles. So we're
the Transit.
Transit is going to replace Econoline. That's a global product.
You got the C-Max.
We've got C-Max. So we have all the different top hats off of the yeah. C cars. Around the rest of the world, we've got our compact pickup truck with the Ranger. That's now a global product. And we've got the, what else am I missing? Yeah, there's just a couple of legacy products like, you know, Mustang and...
But Mustang's not going to change that.
It's not going to change. We've announced...
The philosophy is not going to change.
That's what I meant to say.
Right.
Obviously, the car is going to change. Yeah. But it's not like you say, well, the Mustang's just North America, so we're dropping it.
I think we've announced in Amsterdam we will sell the next Mustang in Europe as well. But Peter's absolutely right. The success of Mustang is because it embodies everything that's great about America. So that's the formula we're sticking to. We think that will resonate in Europe, but we're not by any means trying to aim for somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic, right? We won't aim to target Greenland with the next generation of Mustang.
Well, the Mustang's the soul of the Ford Motor Company. I mean, and this next generation car should be pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Not retro at all, but future think.
Well, you know, we had Al Oppenheiser here a month or whatever ago from Chevrolet, and he said they actually loved the fact that the next generation Mustang would not be out before they had to redo their car because they're keeping a hawk's eye view on what you guys are doing, and they're going to play off that. So whether you go futuristic or retro, that then they're going to react to it accordingly.
You know, the competition, I think, is great. It's competition improves the breed, and it makes us really go back and redouble our efforts. And Camaro is doing really well, and I think it's a good time to be a consumer. You guys touched on it earlier. There's really no bad products out there anymore.
Well, yeah. That's one good thing about being in this town now that we're sort of stumbling back to our feet, is the kind of the old competitive juices are flaring up again, and that's good to see. But, yeah. You know, there's so much talent in this town.
It's amazing, right?
Auburn Hills, Dearborn, Warren. I mean,
and hey, let's not forget, this is why Toyota put in a massive tech center, why Nissan's got a gigantic tech center, and why Hyundai Kia came here to put in a tech center.
Yeah, people outside this town don't realize that. I mean, these are huge facilities.
And we're not even counting the mega tier one suppliers all have R&D and tech centers here, too, from all over the world, not just global suppliers. Right.
Yeah. Just American.
So what about this little model?
Well, you know, we should let everybody know right now, how brought about six of these die-cast models of the Focus ST. So we're going to have a contest. Well, not a contest. No. We're going to let anybody who's watching the show tonight or listening to the podcast have a chance at winning one of these things. All you have to do is shoot us an email, send it to viewermail@outofline.tv, and just put in the subject line Ford Focus ST. And at random, we're going to pick six names from everybody who sends us an email. And so include your address when you send it. And if we pick your name at random from everybody who writes in, you can get one of these cool little die-cast models of the Focus ST.
Awesome.
It'll be good.
Let me look at that.
Yeah.
This is 143rd, right? Yeah. It's cool.
Hey, why don't we take a commercial break right now? And when we come back, we'll get to rapid fire, because I know we got a ton of questions from the audience for you, Hal.
Okay, great.
Ben, let's give a shout out to our friends at Chevrolet.
It was more than a car to him. It really was his baby.
Oh, no. That's my old Chevy. Dear God.
Okay, Ben just reminded me. Let's not forget that we have another contest going live tonight on the show where you can win this very handsome Auto Extremist sweatshirt.
With the throwback type. That was the original masthead type. It's called, a font's called Chiller. Still our favorite.
And there's a trivia question for anybody who's going to win it. So give that again.
There were two drivers who won both the Indy 500 and the Daytona 500. Who are they, and what are the years they won at Daytona?
And you got to get those emails in tonight, because we're going to pick the winner from whoever gets the answer right. And we'll sort out who got it right, and then we'll pick at random somebody. So get your emails in now. And let's get to rapid fire. Ben, let it rip. Okay, here's the rapid-fire part of the show where we get to everybody's questions real fast. Mitch W. wants to know, would Mr. Hao Tai Tang describe how the ST deals with torque steer?
Oh, yes. Our prior generation ST in Europe, we had a mechanical solution called the Revo knuckle. And what we found now with the sophistication and electronic controls, and I talked about torque compensation, we can use the same technology to manage the torque steer. So you guys drive it and let us know what you think, but we think we've done a pretty good job of managing torque steering, allowing us to put all that power down.
But you're doing it electronically,
doing it
not with the Revo knuckle.
Lighter, right?
It's lighter, exactly. The Revo knuckle was heavier, and it's unsprung mass, so that's not...
Weight in the wrong place, to speak.
Right, exactly.
Okay, Viper High says, clearly the new Shelby GT500 has been incredibly well-received, due in part to its 662 horsepower V8 that is the desire of any auto enthusiast on the planet. So you have a supercar engine, but no supercar to put it in. With Chevy and the Vette and the SRT with the Viper, what's the likelihood that Ford will re-enter the supercar market with a GT replacement that will use a variance of this outrageous V8?
Wow, that's a great question.
Something you can't comment on. Let me answer that for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I really can't comment on that right now. Ford is always investigating future powertrains and vehicles, and it's something that may show up on the radar. Or we might put one in the back seat of the Focus in all-wheel drive.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
How's that?
No, we'd love to do it. I keep trying to make the case, and every time our product counsel comes in, we talk about it. We walk them down the hallway, and they point out and make suggestions. But right now, no plan.
Yeah, needless to say, it'll be a surprise.
Pierre Cardin, AMX, says, what were the benchmarks for the Focus ST?
Yeah, so it's the usual suspects, VW GTI, the Mazda product, and the last generation. So we actually relied quite a bit on the last generation ST and the Focus RS were our internal benchmarks.
Yeah, I drove the Focus RS too. Awesome vehicle. And he also goes on to say, doesn't the weight and price of the Subaru BRZ Scion FRS make a tempting performer?
I don't know enough about those products, but certainly we think it's a little bit of a different market segment versus this product. Yeah.
Mike Western says, comparing this, I'm going to try to chop this down a little bit. He says the C-Max Energy is over $6,000 cheaper than a Volt, but it has a range of 240 miles greater than the Volt. He says, I don't know what the EPA numbers are, but sounds like the C-Max costs less than Volt and gets better gas mileage.
It's
and we're just lobbing that up for you to smack it out of the park there, Hal.
We're really proud of the C-Max. We think it's a really fantastic product. Clearly, it's a different product proposition in terms of the styling and the package than what the Volt's going after. But all of his observations around the efficiency of the product and the price point are really good, astute observations.
I think the consumers are going to find that package to be very attractive. Mm-hmm. Price, fuel economy. I mean, the package, just overall dimension, size, how much space it uses in your garage, yet it really is spacious inside.
Right.
I think that's a compelling product.
Utility and the driving attributes as well. We're really proud of that.
And another thing, as Toyota has shown with the Prius, it looks different. You have a silhouette that is only going to be hybrid and or plug-in hybrid.
And that's the first for us. As you know, in the past, we've had it in Fusion. We've had it in MKZ. We've had it in the Escape. And as you're right, it was at a glance, difficult to make the differentiation. Now we have a dedicated top hat for it.
Yeah, because I ran into Mike from Auto Nation, Mike Jackson, and one of the things he was saying is if you're going to sell to the green crowd, you've got to have a vehicle that looks different because they're out to make a personal statement about what they're driving.
And we were just talking before the show. I think the Cadillac ELR might have a real shot because, first of all, the design is quite striking.
Right.
And I think that has a chance to draw people in that will, buy into the extended range electric. But I think, like I said, the C-Max is a compelling package.
Okay, Sean Sweeney says, why are they still using two designs for the Mustang emblem? In 2010, they designed a new one for the car, but yet still use the old design on the grills of the GT/CS and fenders of pony car package cars, wheel centers on all cars.
That's a good question. I'll have to go back and find out why we're doing that. Seems like a complexity reduction opportunity.
And he's got a bunch of Mustang questions, but I think this is one that you can talk about. Will the 2015 Mustang truly be all new? Will it have a design other than retro?
It's going to be all new, and I think Peter touched on it. It's going to be something that I think people will instantly recognize as a Mustang and at the same time move us in a different space. So we're excited to show it when the time is right.
Sounds good. Hey, Ben, we've got some phone calls here. Let's bring in the first one.
Hey, guys, it's Nathan Keeley from Gainesville, Ohio, and I was wondering if your guest tonight knew anything about the Bobcat engine that Ford was developing a while back. Use two different fuel injection systems, one with regular gasoline, the other would use ethanol under high engine loads. Colin Trevor had an article about it a while back. I haven't heard anything else about it. All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, hey, Ben, we'll have to turn that up. We're having problems hearing that out here. But he's talking about the Bobcat with two different delivery systems, something to do about ethanol.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ben, let's bring in another phone call then.
Hey, guys. This is Scott calling from Sterling Heights, Michigan. I'm a huge admirer of the show, and I watch weekly because I think you present some of the most honest, straightforward commentary on the industry. Plus, the guests are always really informative, and it's a real joy to learn from them. This question is for the entire panel, but maybe more so for Peter, given his very defined stance on Dan Akerson. GM is a very unique animal, and serving as quote-unquote top dog could be really likened to being president of the United States. You know, who would really want to tackle this monster? But if Akerson is indeed not the right person to be leading General Motors in this pivotal time, who is the right person? Could you name your top three people in the industry, be they GM insiders or maybe even a dark horse candidate, that are both capable and ambitious enough to take on this position and strengthen the corporation? Thanks very much, and I look forward to each new episode. Take care, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, I would like to think about that and probably write a future column about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so much talent. You know, the thing about Akerson is, I hate throwing Alan Mulally into this because Alan is a unique individual. He brings unique qualifications. He comes from an engineering company that ultimately designs, engineers, develops, and sells products to consumers, whereas Akerson came from basically the venture capital and
IT field.
And in some cases, you know, because we're based here, when we say, oh well, he's not a car guy, and that's not what I'm saying about Akerson. I mean, he isn't, but he doesn't bring anything to the mix. I don't get the derision for the people who actually are responsible for bringing the products to the street and keeping GM in the fray right now. I don't understand that. I don't agree with that style of management. So, coming up with a list of people who could run GM, I'll give it some thought. Maybe we'll talk about it next.
Thursday. No, good to think
and
about
I'm
it.
I'm sure you'd want to think about it.
Yeah, I've got a couple of names already because I've been thinking about it. If I were to go out, would I go at?
Give me your two names.
Well, I think Mark Royce would be very capable of doing it.
Well, I that's an obvious one. I was trying to think of someone
on the outside.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one who I would go. I would seriously look at Kathy Ligocki.
That'd be an inspired choice.
I'll tell you why. Because remember, in our first automotive fantasy draft, she was my draft for my CEO. She has OEM experience. She absolutely clicks with the dealers. You know, when I first met her, she was running Ford of Mexico, and Ford had just announced they were going to move her back to Dearborn, and I saw Mexican car dealers with tears coming down their cheeks because they were losing their beloved Kathy. And I went, wow, I've never seen dealers connect so much with a corporate executive. She's got supplier experience. She's taken a supplier through bankruptcy. The venture capital crowd has come after her. She's done venture capital stuff. So when I look at this breadth of experience of somebody who gets it when it comes to cars, understands the importance of the retail end, has been on the supplier side, understands the financial and corporate venture capital side, Jesus, there's a CEO for you.
Yeah, those are two strong choices.
So anyway, but we'll talk about that more. Let's get back to the questions from the audience. Brian I. says, after looking at the Focus ST in tangerine scream tri-coat paint, I was so much put off by the lack of gloss finish in the hatch and door jams. Why? It just looks unfinished.
In the hatch and door jam.
Yeah.
He's saying that the the finish on the paint doesn't carry over to the hatch and door jams?
That
doesn't sound right to me.
We're going to have to get out and look at this this whole thing. Let's see. What else do we have? Oh, here's an interesting one from A.M. Guerrero, writing in from Manila in the Philippines, says, in Southeast Asia, especially Thailand, E20 capable is becoming common. Globally, all the new standard gasoline engines are designed to be at least E20 capable. Is that true? Is Ford doing E20 capable stuff?
No, we're not. As you know, John, from your experience in Brazil we're doing a lot of work with ethanol, anything from E22 up to E100. So technically it's possible. Right now, I think our global standard is E15. Right? Mm-hmm. But there are some things you have to, beyond E15, there's more water content in the fuel. We have to make some changes to the injectors and the fuel system. And then as you get up towards E100, you've got cold start challenges.
Yeah, which is easier to do in a country like Brazil, where doesn't get as cold as it might up here.
Yeah. So certainly it's possible, but it's not our global design standard as of yet. Yeah.
Gotcha. Hey, we've got another phone call. Ben, let's bring that in.
Hi, this is John from New York. I'd like to know why the civilian EcoBoost V6 Taurus costs $10,000 more than the police EcoBoost V6 Taurus. Our Ford passenger car is mainly for the fleet rental market. Thank you very much. Bye.
That's an easy answer. I mean, all the car companies, Ford, GM, Fiat, Chrysler, package their police vehicles for these communities. They have to come up with a fleet price, to make it attractive for these communities and state agencies to replace their vehicles. That's why.
Yeah. Anybody who's buying fleet is buying in bulk. Yeah. And you always get a discount when you buy in bulk.
Sure.
So, yeah.
I just noticed that Birmingham has a couple black Taurus police cars with big white police on the side, and they look pretty badass too. Of course, Birmingham is like a radar community. They should just put a sign in, whatever.
We've got a couple of other quick questions about the Focus. Will the U.S. get a three-door Focus?
No. Yeah, it's the body style change is very investment intensive, as you can imagine. So right now our plan is sticking with the five-door body style and the four-door.
Yeah, all us enthusiasts love three doors, but they don't sell very well in this country.
Right.
It's like sport wagons. All us enthusiasts love the sport wagons, and nobody else buys them.
Yeah. Right.
So what about a higher performance version of the SVT or RS?
Right now, we've got this ST that we're just launching. We're really excited about it. So
we'll keep focused on that. Okay. We're getting to the top of the hour. It might be time to wrap this up. But I think we do have somebody here that's answered the question correctly, Peter. I think we have a winner.
We have a winner?
We have a winner for the Auto Extremist
sweatshirt
with the original type font chiller, you called it?
Yeah, it's chiller type font.
That's pretty cool. I like that. Viper High. Looks like you won it, Viper High. So I'm sure they'll get us. What? No. The control room has got issues with what I'm saying here.
No, we don't. Never mind.
Okay.
He won.
Okay.
Okay. And the answer is Mario Andretti in 1967 in a Ford, and A.J. Foyt in a Mercury in 1971.
So the ones who won both Daytona and Indy.
Yeah.
The only two drivers ever to have done so.
Yeah. And there'll be other trivia questions because Mario and A.J.'s career stats have interesting, high points, they rival each other. That's the endless debate. Who was better?
That's right. And don't forget, you could still win one of these diecast models. All you have to do is shoot us an email with Ford Focus ST in the subject line, and we're going to Just pick six names at random, and we'll announce them next week. But anyway, Hal, thanks so much for coming
on.
Thanks for having
the show.
Me.
It's great having you here. It's really cool to have an ST in the studio with us. And
enjoy
it a lot.
All you enthusiasts out there, go drive one.
And so, Peter, great being with you too, man.
John, another good show.
Yeah. So I love these where we have real car people and a real car in the studio. So thanks, everybody, and we'll be back here in another week.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.